Bhagavan Sri Krishna is, in the second chapter, introducing the entire Bhagavad Gita, and after summarizing all the topics that he is going to do, the last few weeks, Bhagavan has been telling us about Karma Yoga, and he gives two definitions, Samatvam Yoga Uchyate and Yoga Karmasu Kaushalam. Samatva means equanimity, so a person who remains balanced in all different situations is said to be a true yogi. Yogi is not necessarily one who can do all the exercises or one who sits in the forest. Yes, that is yoga, but in our day-to-day life, yoga is equanimity and efficiency in action. It does not mean that when we say equanimity, he just sits there and does nothing. He is very active, he is very efficient, and accomplishes a lot, because that also people have this idea that people who are on spiritual path become useless. But Bhagavan says, no, continue to do your duties with equanimity, and as your mind becomes more and more purified, as our vasanas reduce, so and so the mind becomes purer, and ultimately when the person becomes one with the Lord, with the Self, such a person is said to be Jivan Mukta. Jivan Mukta, the one who is totally free of vasanas. I heard a very beautiful definition by Mahavir. I think I sent to some of you. He says, when breath is ended and desires are still present, that is death. Breath has ended, but the desires are still present. That is death. But when desires are ended and breath is still present, that is moksha, that is liberation. So the person is still alive, but he has gone beyond all vasanas. While most of us, when we die, we still have so many unfulfilled desires. So that is called death, and then you go through rebirth. So Bhagavan is telling us that Jivan Mukta is not something we will get after death somewhere in some other world. But as we have seen in the lives of Gurudev, Swami Chinmayananda and other great acharyas, you can see a Jivan Mukta right here in this life itself. So having finished basically the introduction to the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna comes to the best part of the second chapter, which is actually not part of the second chapter, but it is the part that is most quoted throughout the world whenever Bhagavad Gita is referred. And it is said Mahatma Gandhi himself used to read these particular verses every day and try to bring them into this life. It is called Sthita Prajna Lakshana. So from verse number 54 to verse number 71, these 17 verses are indicating what a Sthita Prajna is. Sthita Prajna is a man of steady wisdom. So we'll talk about that today, and we'll start with Arjuna's question. So chapter 2, verse 54. Arjuna uvacha,
Arjuna uvacha,
sthita prajnasya ka bhasha,
sthita prajnasya ka bhasha,
samadhisthasya keshava,
samadhisthasya keshava,
sthitadi kim prabhasheta,
sthitadi kim prabhasheta,
kimasita vrajeta kim,
kimasita vrajeta kim.
Arjuna uvacha. So this is the first time Arjuna has asked a question during the teachings of Bhagavan. And as we saw throughout the first chapter and the first 10 verses of the second chapter, we saw Arjuna's sorrow, Arjuna's delusion. Arjuna Vishad Yoga, the first chapter is called Arjuna's sorrow. And he was a totally shattered individual. By the 10th verse, he said, of the second chapter, he says, my hands are shaking, my mouth is dry, I'm not able to hold up my bow. The greatest warrior of his time could not even hold up his bow. And he says, I am confused. I don't know what to do. And this shattered individual in the span of 44 verses, Bhagwan has changed his thinking where now he is more balanced. And throughout these 44 verses, the teaching was of this person of wisdom, how he works in the world. So Bhagavad Gita is not something which is a text only for people who are on the spiritual path. It is, but it is very relevant for people like you and me who are still involved in the work, still work in the world, and how are we to work? So Arjuna sees that and he realizes that there is a higher goal in life than just, you know, doing his war and duties, and that my true nature, as Bhagavan says in the beginning of the second chapter, his teaching, he says, is your true nature is Om. You are that Atma, that divinity, and that is what you have to reach. And so he suddenly realizes that, yes, that is a goal I am to reach. But he's not sure how to do it. And so he wants Krishna to tell him, how can AI recognize a person who is Sthita Prajna, who is a man of steady wisdom? But these verses are not to look at others and say, okay, this person is evolved and this person is not. It is for me that now, having seen how a person of wisdom lives, and we have seen that in our life, even all the acharyas who come every month, we have some speakers, and you can see how these people live this life. It's not only something that's in the book, but you can see it. So Arjuna wants to know, how can I live this life of a wise person? So Arjuna Uvacha, so he asked, he said, Sthita Prajnasya ka bhasha. Sthita Prajna is the one of man of steady wisdom. Actually, we'll start with verse number 54, because this was last week, we had not finished it. So verse number 54, so man of steady wisdom. Prajna means wisdom, and sthita means one who is established in wisdom. Ka bhasha. Bhasha is in Hindi is translated as paribhasha. If those who know Hindi, or I don't know if it is in other languages also. Paribhasha or bhasha means what is the description or definition of a wise person. How do you define or describe a wise person? Ka bhasha. And who is he? Samadhistha Keshava. So Samadhistha, one who is established in Samadhi. What is Samadhi? Samadhi is oneness with God, with the Lord within. So person who walks and talks with that wisdom and is all the time established in that wisdom. O Keshava, O Krishna. Keshava because he had this beautiful curly black hair. So that's why he got the name Keshava. So he says, who is this wise person? How can we recognize him? One who is established in wisdom and constantly established in the self. And then he says, not only how can we recognize that person, how does this person function in the world? How does a wise person function? So sthitadhi, so one who is established in the wisdom, kim prabhashet, what does he speak? Or how does he speak? Does he speak or does he stay in silence in the Himalayas, you know, in total meditation? Does he even deal with the people, or does he go into some forest and become totally isolated? So does he speak? How does he speak? Kim asit, how does he sit? That means how is he established in that wisdom? And vrajet kim, and how does he move about? So how does such a person deal with others? So the first question asks, ka bhasha, is how is his inner state of mind? How is his inner state of mind? That is the first question. And the second line, the three questions talk about his outer behavior. So Arjuna wants to know, how is his thinking and how does this thinking translate into action? So that's what he wants to know, his inner and his outer life. What does he think? How does he stay inside? And how does he function in the world? And does he even live or not? And because, as we said, people think spirituality makes you useless. You know, then you are no good to anybody. You are just staying in your own bliss and, you know, somewhere lost and like a madman you are roaming around. No, in fact, such a person is actually even more able to function than you and me, because this person is so established in the truth, so established in the wisdom, that he becomes an instrument of God. And God functions through such a person. So he is much more better person. And as we see all these great Mahatmas, whether you look at Buddha or Shankaracharya or Jesus or Guru Nanak or all of these saints and prophets, how they were able to spread this knowledge and establish. They did not want to establish this called Buddhism or Sikhism or Christianity, but their followers who then took their teachings and then spread them throughout the world. So that is how these people function. So they are not useless, they are actually more useful. Now the question is the level of the question, and why should we ask this question? As we said, Arjuna was shattered and now we see his change. Now why should we ask the question, and what is the level of question we should ask? And people always, you know, whenever Swamiji said, do you have any questions? Now people have different motives. Vimalji told some of these and some. So one person will ask a question, I don't have a question, but I think my neighbor really, he doesn't understand. So for him, I'm asking the question. Or I'm asking the question, but before asking the question, they will give a long comment. That means I'm showing you my knowledge, and the question is just let people know how much I know. The third kind of people are, you know, kehte nai ko dekhkar baal bade ho gaye. There's a phrase in Hindi. So, no, actually my hair is not, but in India, see, barbers come to the house. Actually my hair is not long, but I saw the barber, I might as well get it cut. You know, bhai ko, nai ko dekhkar baal bade ho gaye. So he says, actually I don't have a question, but since nobody is asking, let me ask. Or it is, the true question should only be asked when you have done mananam within yourself. You have thought it over and you have a genuine question that is your question. It is not your wife's question. It is not your anybody else's. It's my own doubt. Only then the question will have meaning. So when we ask a question, first of all, I have to contemplate on it and I have to say, okay, this is what the teacher has taught so far, but this aspect is not very clear to me. And so you ask the question after having thought about it, and then the question will be meaningful. And then also the teacher also, from the level of the question, knows the level of the teacher. Like somebody asks a question during meditation, should I face east or should I face north? Or during pranayam, should I breathe from the left nostril or right nostril? Those are very basic questions. And then the teacher will ask, answer at that level. But if you ask that a mind and intellect who is established in duality, how can such a mind experience the non-dual Brahman state? Wow, you know, the teacher is very happy that student is asking. So again, at the level we are, we ask the question and then the teacher will ask appropriately. But for us, the goal of spirituality should be haath dhokar piche pad jata. You know, in Hindi, there is another phrase, ke haath dhokar means this is my overriding goal in life, my overriding passion. Nothing else I want more than that. And then alone, spiritual progress is possible. So, lot of commentators say that these 11 or 17 verses should be memorized by all of us and are very useful in meditation, because in meditation you want to know what I should do, what, so the noble thoughts are what we should entertain in meditation. So the mind in meditation cannot be stopped. You know, people think that the mind should become zero. Mind will not. Mind is like a flow of water. So the mind which is flowing outward in meditation should be given a noble field to work in. to graze in, to roam around in. So this noble field can be given by these verses. So that's why they recommend that these verses be memorized and be used in meditation. So talking about Sthita Pragna, of course we have so many examples, and we have talked about Mirabai and Narasimha Mehta and Sant Gyaneshwar and all of those. But I thought today I would talk about Pujya Guruji. I have also talked about Gurudev many times. And how he got into Chinmaya Mission, this will show you his strong desire. So it happened, Guruji was a college graduate in Bhopal, and he heard Gurudev Swami Chinmayananda talking. Guruji's picture is at the entrance, by the way. If you enter on the right side, you will see. And he was the worldwide head of Chinmaya Mission from 1993 to 2017. And last year, he voluntarily dropped the position, and then Swami Swarupananda ji became the head. And Swami Swarupananda ji will be coming to Bakersfield in July 25, 26, 27. So please mark your calendars, because his topic is very good. Storm to perform, very good topic. So you'll be getting the email. So coming back to Guruji, he was a college graduate in Bhopal, ordinary person, just graduated. He had a job, and he heard Gurudev, and he was so inspired. He wanted to listen more. So 2-4 days when Gurudev was in Bhopal, he heard him, and then he found out that Gurudev is starting a program. Actually, this was the second. He had already done one course, and that every 2 years, you know, they have a program where they teach acharyas, and all of the acharyas who come here, Ishwarananda ji and Vimal ji and everybody have studied there. So he found out that there is going to be a course starting in August. So he resigned his job and told his parents, I'm going to go join the course. And his parents actually encouraged him. So he shows up there in Bombay to do the course. And I think 20 or 30, 40 students used to come. So about 40 students had shown up, and they all came there. And Gurudev had a massive heart attack, and he was hospitalized. And they said at least for 3 or 4 months, he won't be able to teach. You know, he'll be on rest and he'll recover. So all the students said, oh, there's no course. Course is canceled. They say, yep, course is canceled. We'll start next year. They said, okay, we'll come back next year. So they all left. Somebody went back to the family. Somebody went back to his job. Guruji said, I'm not going anywhere. I left my job. I left my family. I'm going to stay. He was the only out of the 40. He said, why should I go? I'm here. I'm staying. So Gurudev said, you want to stay? He said, yeah, Gurudev, I'm here. Whatever work you want to assign, do it. Because I have left the world. I'm here to realize. I'm here to learn from you at your feet. So Gurudev was surprised that this student, 1 year there's going to be no teaching, but he doesn't want to leave. He said, I'm here. And within 2-3 months, of course, Gurudev recovered. And then he used to travel all over the world, India, and give talks, and Guruji would accompany him like his secretary, do his paperwork and all. And so he was getting one-on-one teaching from the master for almost a whole year. How fortunate he was. See, you and I would have said, oh, course is not there. Let's come back next year. So one whole year, and in Gurudev was very strict. What he would do, if he has said some verse of the Gita, next time the reference came, he would say half the verse and ask Guruji, I think, what was his name? His name was Sudhakar. Yeah, Sudhakar, you finish the verse. Now, Sudhakar, he has just heard the verse once, so he has to be very alert. Gurudev would not finish. He say half the verse, now you finish. And you and I would say, oh, it's in my notes. Let me know. Not in your notes. You have to have it memorized. So whatever he heard, he would hear with full attention. Or sometimes some teachings, he would say, okay, now what comes after this? So Gurudev was training him. And soon he found that Guruji was a wonderful teacher. And he started, after he finished, he started assigning him to do Ramayana, Bhagavat, because he had a lot of devotion. He had a beautiful voice. He could sing, play the harmonium. And Guruji is a unique blend of bhakti and gyan. Amazing. If you want to see both in one individual, he's so unassuming, looks so modest, but profound knowledge. I mean, if you sit in his Upanishad class, wow, I remember when we were in the course in near Palm Springs, and after meditation, hour and a half Upanishad class, it was like you were roaming in the clouds, unbelievable knowledge. And at the same time, then in the next some camp, when he's doing Ramayana or Bhagavat, he'll make you cry. That much devotion and love for God he has. So very unique individual, a beautiful combination of bhakti and jnana. If you want to see, that is him. And if you ever have the opportunity to visit India, go on the website. And if you can listen, he doesn't travel anymore. He used to, when he was the worldwide head, used to travel all over the world. But now he doesn't travel. He just stays in India. But he does talks in different parts of India. 1 week here, 2 weeks here. Definitely he stays in Pune, in Kolvan, you know, that is near Pune, where the Chinmaya Vibhuti is built. And Guruji was not only a wonderful teacher, but a great organizer, because people thought when once Gurudev passes, leaves his body, Chinmaya Mission will fall apart, because Chinmaya Mission used to be Swami Chinmayananda, and people always said, what will happen after Gurudev? And somebody asked Guruji, Swami Tejomani, he said, are you in Gurudev's shoes? He said, no, I'm not in his shoes. I'm at his feet. So his whole life was spent in service of Gurudev. And when he was the head, he never said, I am the head. He said, I am the servant of Lord and Gurudev, and I'm here to do their work. And in those 24 years, Chinmaya Mission, instead of falling apart, grew three times. Tripled its attendance, its number of centers, more and more books were being published, more and more centers. They made this huge Vibhuti Center. So he did that all with utmost humility, utmost modesty. So if you want to see a Sthita Prajna walking and talking and moving on the ground, I would go visit him. Of course, Gurudev was, but he's no longer with us. But you can see Gurudev in his videos, in his books. If you read the Gita commentary, he comes through very beautifully. But if you want to see a live person, so I thought I would just share my personal idea of Guruji. So this is Arjuna's question. So he wants to know, how do I recognize a man of wisdom? How is his inner thinking? And then how does he deal with the people? How does he walk? How does he talk? And how does he sit? So this is Arjuna's question. And then the next 16 verses are Lord's answer to these four questions.